This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana, and the remarkable Robin Dow is at the ready. If you're ready to call, give us a ring at 877-217-5757. Roy Fletcher is in the house, and he is a political consultant of renown. He's been in the business for a long time now. I remember when you were the kid. I'm that old, and now you're the
veteran. When we were both kids, Jim.
Yeah, well, Roy is still in the game. He does have a candidate on the ballot this Saturday in John Fleming, who is running for treasurer, and we have visited with Congressman Fleming, and tomorrow we will hear from his opponent, Dustin Granger. But it's a situation now in which we have such one-party rule in the state when it comes to statewide offices. That may explain part of the apathy, is that a lot of these races, we pretty much know the Republicans are going to win, and the three Republicans this Saturday on the ballot for Attorney General, for Treasurer, and for Secretary of State, they're all favored. What do you think?
I don't know if it's the lack of competition between the parties or exactly what it is, but clearly, something over the last several years, basically, and even since 2020 and 2019, 2015, that something happened in Louisiana that people just sort of disconnected from their politics here. Local politics can create a pretty good turnout when it's in a vacuum, but the statewide stuff just doesn't do what it used to do in terms of turnout. And we've seen it among all groups, particularly this year, we've seen it among African Americans. It's a very, very odd situation when you run a campaign in Louisiana and what your turnout is 36%.
A little under that, yeah.
Yeah, a little under that, 35.7, yeah. I think. But the point was is that it's just a very, very odd thing. I don't know if it's people one, the lack of competition, or two, is that people generally believe the state is headed in a really bad way, bad direction, wrong direction, and it has felt that way for a good bit, for a good time, so the issue becomes, have people given up? And people leaving and so on and so forth.
It's a complex situation because most polls show John Bel Edwards leaves office as a popular governor.
Yes.
And he is a Democrat. But in a race that we knew in Louisiana, anybody with a brain knew that Donald Trump was going to beat Joe Biden in 2020 in this state, in Louisiana. We had double the turnout. Biden,
yes.
Biden got 300,000 more votes than Jeff Landry did,
right.
And he lost by 400,000.
Exactly.
So
right.
we got geared up for that one. It seems to be a personality-driven thing.
That may be. You know, Tip O'Neill used to say all politics is local.
Well, that's not the case anymore.
No, all politics is national, it looks like. And the local part of drags hind, but there are some local places. There's some local races that can create turnout. But the truth is that they did turn out in the presidential, both 16 and 20. But then you look at the statewides and that were far off. They were much different, even in 15 mm-hmm. and 19.
But to show you how what you just said, all politics is now national. We have this hot state rep race with Barbara Freiberg running for re-election against Steve Myers, and I see that Steve is on Facebook saying he's backing Israel. Well, he's standing with Israel. Well, I believe him, and I think that's great, but what does that have to do with District 70 in Baton Rouge, Louisiana?
Set of values. I think that's what it is. I think it's about a set of, what is your worldview? And when you have a worldview, what does that enunciate about your set of values that you have? And I think people vote on values a lot. At least that's what it appears now.
Well, you're the pro. You would know. 877-217-5757 for Roy Fletcher. Kevin in North Baton Rouge. Hello, Kevin. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes, the reason why a lot of black people are not voting in Louisiana, we just say, you just have Republicans up there, they're going to vote no on everything and not tell the truth. So just let them tear it down, and let's see what group of people can handle it once it's torn down and have to be redone again, and who can handle the bad end of all of this with the poor people and everything.
All right, well, people don't vote. That is a choice, too. And when people say Jeff Landry didn't have a mandate, I say he did, because people made the choice not to vote. And those who did vote voted overwhelmingly for him. But black voters, of course, feel in many cases disenfranchised, and I can understand that, too. But there are 1 million black voters in Louisiana. If 1 million of them, let's say 800,000 black voters, had cast ballots on October 14th, Sean Wilson would be the governor of Louisiana right now.
He would have been governor.
He would have been governor.
Yep. So, I mean, I think that the question of turnout, at least this broad question of turnout and what we're dealing with here, gets down to some things that are not as simple as we'd like to make them out to be. And I think you have personality. I think you have the lack of competition. But I also think you have sort of this whole sort of societal depression in Louisiana about where the state is headed and so on and so forth.
And a listener notes that a good portion of the legislative elections were uncontested this year.
A good portion were.
That Absolutely. Drives turnout as well.
Yes, it does. It does.
But imagine being elected to office, and Tim Temple is a nice man, and he ran a good race 4 years ago, but he won a statewide office with no opponent.
Here.
Zero.
It's
yours.
Nobody wants that job. And Jim, I can remember, in the past, and you can too, but I can remember in the past, let's say 79, there wasn't a state rep that didn't get a challenge almost. I mean, people wanted those jobs.
Yeah.
They wanted to be a member of the legislature.
The pay was the same then that it is now, too.
It was.
That may be a factor.
It may be a factor. But the fact is that they wanted the jobs, and a lot of those people that wanted them because they viewed that as a way to do stuff, to help. I mean, most of them were pretty well off at the time.
Well, I asked John Bel Edwards, our governor, and his next to last show with us yesterday about the pay for statewide office holders. He earns $130,000 a year. Now, there are perks that go with being governor of Louisiana. But,
well, yes.
But at $130,000, he's not in the top 100 or 200 highest paid officials in the state. I think the governor should be paid higher than the LSU football coach. But
I don't know if I go that far, but I understand your point.
Well, as Babe Ruth said when he was being paid more than Herbert Hoover, he said, well, I had a better year than he did. Well, John Bell had a better year than Brian Kelly.
Yeah, I think he had. Yeah,
so, and Kelly's making $10 million a year.
Yeah, well, that's
minimum.
And then we got the guy from A&M, right? Jimbo.
Yeah, well, the highest paid public official in Louisiana is Brian Kelly, and the second highest is Kim Mulkey. And she runs a program that lost $6 million last year.
Yeah. Well, so, but, you know, I mean, I get back to the pay thing. I'm not going to do it. I do think, though, that people have a sense that their state is off track, way off track. People are actually leaving the state. I mean, you can see it in the numbers. They're particular kinds of people, but they're leaving. They want to go get jobs, opportunities, all that kind of stuff. And then you have this lack of competition and maybe lackadaisical kind of candidates that are not as good as they used to. And they're not. They're just not. There are some good ones, but I remember a time in Louisiana where you could walk in the Louisiana Senate and you're going to be confronted by people like Claude Duval and Edgar Mouton, and you can go down a list of people there that were serious intellectual types.
Well, but look at what we've produced. We've got Mike Johnson, who's
done it. I mean, absolutely. I mean, that's a good point.
And Steve Scalise. We've got people in high places.
Yep.
And there are many who would argue that Edwin Edwards and David Duke were horrible, but yet it spurred the biggest turnout in the history of our state.
It really did, didn't it?
It did.
It was over 80%.
It was, yes.
Yeah. 83.
So.
it was unbelievable. It was a clear difference.
Well, Amy and Gonzalez. Amy, you're on with Roy. Good morning. Hi, Amy. You're on Talk Louisiana. Do we have Amy Robin? Let's see. There she is. Go ahead.
Good morning.
So I have a question, and it goes to your statement of values a bit. At what point do we actually listen to what all polls indicate and stop listening and having campaign or candidates state these national positions to rally a base when polling indicates most of their base does not necessarily agree with it? And I think the last turnout speaks exactly to that. So I'm, as a consultant, I'm interested in your take on that. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. I don't quite know what you mean, but I think I know what you mean, but I don't know exactly. But I'll answer it this way. I think that there are two things. One is...
Okay, we do have to take a break.
Go ahead.
It'll only be 89.3 seconds, but we'll get Roy's response to Amy when we return after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Roy Fletcher, the ubiquitous political consultant, and one of the last who handles candidates of all stripes. Now, I say that, but right now, almost all the candidates out there with any money are Republicans. Sean Wilson, when you think about a dollar per vote basis, he said he spent $300,000, Roy. He got 26% of the votes. That's not bad. But the fact that he only had $300,000.
It's amazing, man.
And he was the standard bearer of the party with more members than any other in the state of Louisiana.
I think Cleo had more than $300,000 in 1995.
Cleo got more votes than Jeff Landry did.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but back to Amy and these candidates, local candidates taking national positions and on issues that are really not likely to crop up in their positions that they're seeking. That's a time-honored tradition. It's just the issues change a little bit. But,
that's right.
But what do you make of that?
Now, I think that it's a shorthand way to express what my worldview is. If I say that I'm a conservative, people are going, that's great. Well, I'm a Louisiana conservative. Blah, blah, blah. No. Where do you stand on abortion? You know, that where do you stand on is whatever the case may be. It's a shorthand way of somebody to say, this is my values. And you can trust it. And that's all it is. But here's the difference. She was talking about the polls that they don't always agree. No, they don't. But you're not worried about the polls. You're worried about winning an election. Sometimes you may have an intensity on one issue that you can use to your advantage.
And that's been proved over and over on the gun issue, is that most polls show that people certainly would like to get rid of assault weapons, maybe even in Louisiana, but the intensity for those who treasure that option.
Yeah, we're pretty intense.
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
Yeah.
Mike in Villa Del Rey. Hello, Mike. You're on with Roy.
Hey, good morning. We just elected a governor. Probably he's going to be around for 8 years, like Jim said on an earlier show. And I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think he respected the outcome of the last presidential election. They had corruption there that he said was corruption. He doesn't respect climate change, which I think Exxon does. And he's going to be around for 8 years. I got a 12-year-old daughter. I'm trying to put a package together where she can get the hell out of this godforsaken state.
All right. Well, Mike, that's a nice rosy scenario.
But that's a scenario that I hear a lot. I'm telling you, I hear that a lot. And it bothers me a great deal. But it goes back to this notion of turnout that we talked about.
Well, and also Landry, I'm sure, will be somewhat different as governor.
Oh, yeah, he's going to be different.
Than he was as attorney general. But he is a conservative.
He is a conservative.
And his politics are to the right of mine, but his politics are closer to where the state of Louisiana is right now.
It seems to be. At least those that pay attention and go vote. You might do a poll and find that the whole state, if you did everybody in a poll, you'll find the whole state doesn't agree with certain things that conservatives do. On the other hand, they don't vote. So the question is, who shows up?
Well,
bottom line.
Jim on I-12. Jim, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, gentlemen. I think a lot of it is disgust. That's the part that you're leaving out in this equation.
He said disgust.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Disgust. So in my district, we had, in the primary election, we had three people running for Valerie Hodges' old seat. And none of them were worth voting for. None of them were competent. All of them had jumped down the QAnon sewer and flushed themselves full of conspiracy theory, the craziness. And, yeah, there's a reason why. I mean, I didn't vote in that race. I voted in other races. And this is what you're up against. And I've got a 16-year-old, and I'm right there with your previous caller. Is that, yeah, I'm making sure that he knows the first thing he should do is get out. And it's because, right as you mentioned also, that, you know, Jeff Landry represents so many of the views of the people of Louisiana, and that's the issue.
All right. But is Jeff Landry any different than Greg Abbott or Ron DeSantis in those states? Or Kemp in Florida, in Georgia, rather. Those states are supposedly thriving, and they have very conservative governors. I don't know that the end of the world that Jeff Landry is becoming governor of Louisiana, Roy. What do you think?
No. What's a public official supposed to do? Not represent the people that elected him? I mean, come on. There's a sense of democracy there that I think maybe somebody left out. But the fact is that disgust. I call it depression. I call it malaise. He calls it disgust. I mean, I hear that over and over and over, what those two gentlemen have said. And it's real, and it's interesting. Landry's announced yesterday his inauguration. I think it's a really good play. Announced his inauguration theme is Louisiana Come Home. And that's exactly tapping right in to what we're talking about here.
All right, Perry and Hammond. Perry, you're on with Roy Fletcher. Good morning.
Hey, Roy. Good morning. How are you guys doing today?
Fine.
Good morning.
My question is a little bit, or my statement could be a little bit off topic. Now, I'm retired as a police officer. I'm from New Orleans, lived in Arizona, came back home after I retired. And so just recently, I discovered that there is a statute, a Louisiana revised statute, 17-1807. It was passed in 1990, and then last year the governor signed off on it, enacted it. It essentially, it's free tuition for anybody that's 55 or older, and your books are, you know, 50% off. And so I've been trying to find out more about this legislative act or law, and nobody seems to know where the money was set aside or how anybody has access to the money. And I'm kind of surprised. We're trying to keep people in our state. We're trying to draw more people in our state, make it better. But if you put forth effort to create laws and statutes and not.
All right. I think we know where you are. But and that question, by the way, if you call the Capitol, you probably get an answer. But at any rate, are we doing enough to keep our best and brightest?
I mean,
by the way, when they leave, they're not likely coming back. The key is to keep them here, and that was what TOPS was all about. But now, a lot of times, they get their education here, taxpayers pay for it, and then they're off to the races.
They go somewhere else. On the other hand, I mean, to deny somebody that freedom is a little bit, I'm reluctant to do that. But it seems to me that what you have here is that ultimately you have people leaving. Best and your brightest, college educated is what we're talking about. And that's the sense. I don't know if they're the best and the brightest, but they're college educated. The truth is they go into an economy in Louisiana in many instances they have no utility yet. Now, they just don't have the utility in this economy. And so the question becomes, well, if it's going to be like Texas, well, you got Texas A&M, you got all kind of high tech stuff going on over there, yada, yada, yada. You don't have that.
Well, we have two Fortune 500 companies in Louisiana. One is Entergy, which is now kind of shaky as to whether they're really here.
Yep.
And the other is Lumen Technologies in Monroe, the former CenturyTel.
Yeah, who's basically moved everything out of there except a couple of call centers.
And their stock price has been hovering at $1.
Yep.
And actually has gone below it a few times.
Yep.
It's gone down 90% in the last
wow.
year. So we're obviously not an economic powerhouse. An hour plane flight away is Atlanta, and they've got 17 Fortune 500 companies in Atlanta.
My children are in Sandy Springs, Georgia, out there, Silver, whatever it is. And then my son is in Idaho.
All right. Well,
that's where they went.
It's not uncommon either. We are facing a net loss for the first time in actual population.
Yeah.
And if we don't address the environmental issues, the great city of New Orleans, which is a crown jewel of Louisiana, may be floating away. But we'll talk more with Roy after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Pleased to have you aboard. And we have a new signature sponsor, Subaru. And signature support comes from the fine entity in Baton Rouge, SubaruBR.com. And with us is Roy Fletcher for a few more moments, and we will hear from Mark Ballard of The Advocate in short order as well. 877-217-5757 is your number. Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Hello, Patrick. You're on with Roy.
Hey, I've been listening to y'all's discussion. I don't think y'all get into the heart of the matter. Jim, you said earlier that if all black people had showed up to vote, the Democrats would have won. I mean, that's kind of part of the problem. People just assume black people vote Democrat. Maybe that's true. But I think a lot of Democrat voters are not voting because they've seen what a Democrat leadership has led to. They see what happened in New Orleans.
All right. Well, Governor Edwards has been in office the last 8 years, and certainly the budget is in a lot better shape than it was when he inherited it. He's a Democrat. And the fact is, most blacks in Louisiana, and when I say most, over 90% are Democrats. And blacks actually comprise a majority of the Democratic Party in Louisiana now. And most Republicans in Louisiana are white. And it's just a fact of life that Democrats, when they have resources, usually get about 95% of the black vote, and sometimes even a bit more than that. But this time, and I trust, and I've looked at the same numbers, I feel he's right, John Cuvion. Landry got 12% of the black vote.
Yeah.
Now, he worked hard,
he
and
did.
he has allies
he
in
does.
The black community.
He does. He's very, very yeah, – that's the one thing I think people forget or miss about him, and it kind of gets back to that question that was just being asked, that is that Jeff is a – he's pretty good. He can build a coalition.
Mm-hmm.
He's very good at it. And he can see – I've seen him at least one time. I was sitting with him and I saw him pick up on some stuff with some trial lawyers and quickly was able to explain where his position was in a way that satisfied them as well as the business. I mean, he's good
all
at
right.
this.
Well, and you, I think we're going to make news here. Roy was the guy running that third-party operative, weren't you?
I was doing the TV for it.
Well, that
Jason,
was where the action was.
Jason Hebert ran it, and then Shane Guidry was the guy that was – you know, is helping put up the money on it. There were some other people put up money. Yeah, but we did sort of the whack-a-mole thing.
What about the Republican Governors Association, that stuff?
That was Teeple.
That was
Teeple.
We were
all in that. Yeah,
so,
I mean, it's pretty funny.
So
that was funny stuff.
Teeple was kind of working for Landry, which is kind of, although he was close to Wagasback. Right?
Yeah, but you notice what he was doing was, yeah.
He was beating down Sean Wilson,
yeah,
or trying to.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think there was a couple of things going on. It was pretty interesting.
But you know, I mentioned that one weekend I'm in the Atlanta airport, and I'm seeing this. I'm watching LSU play Missouri, and there's a spot attacking Sean Wilson in Atlanta. So they bought the national package. I guess the locals in Louisiana were sold out. So the way to get into Louisiana was to buy the national package.
Well, plus if you're doing that nationally, you may be affecting some funders putting up big money to send in here. That's the other part of it, too.
Okay. Craig in Natchitoches. Craig, you're on with Roy. Good morning, Craig.
Craig.
All right, I've got one question for Roy, one question for you, Jim. The question for Roy is, let's go back to the 2008 presidential primary. If Hillary Clinton would have won that over Barack Obama, got elected and got reelected in 2012, do you think we would have ended up with Trump in 2016? And Jim, the question for you is, do you plan on, or is he plan on continuing to Ask the Governor show with once Landry takes over as governor?
Well, we have talked with the incoming governor about this, and he has not said yay or nay yet, but it would be nice if we did continue it. I would love that. And Jeff Landry might surprise us.
I think he's going to be terrific on that show.
Well, he's got a big personality, and Roy, as you know, in Louisiana, we love characters, and that's one of the reasons why turnout may not be as high as it used to be. As Louis Unglesby said, where have all the characters
gone?
That's
a good point. And Louis said that to me one day. He said, I just can't find any characters anymore. I'm like, it's a good point, Louis. You're one. He is. He's a character.
Michael in Mike Foster's hometown of Franklin. Good morning, Michael.
Morning, Jim. Morning, Roy.
Good morning.
Yeah, I just think it's funny. We're at, you know, Roy, you and I are both old enough to remember politics as it was when WWL, WDSU might tell you, you can't run that ad because it's not truthful.
Yeah.
And now you can say anything, anything.
Well, you can try, I have this for sure.
You know, and, you know, everything the media lies, the media lets the political consultants and candidates lie. And that's a problem. You can tell your kids they have in Idaho and Georgia too.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, we have it all over the country.
There's climate change is coming for them too. You can tell them that.
All right.
And you know the problem, the political system we have is not going to be fixed till we get rid of partisan gerrymandering. You know, where you live in a district where you can never vote for anybody you like. You know, and it's just crazy, and we have all this built-in minority rule stuff in the Constitution, the federal laws, that, you know, that's got to be fixed. You know, I mean, all of that is craziness.
All right, brother.
A listener is asking us to follow up on 2012, the question from Craig in Natchitoches.
Yeah.
This is something that
woulda, shoulda, coulda.
Well, I don't know if Hillary had won in 2012, who knows what would have happened in 2016. My guess is that the power of incumbency would have given her enough of an edge that she would have won. Well, but look, what if Romney had won?
That's what I was going to ask. The better question is, what if Romney had won?
Romney would have been an 8-year president probably, and the Republican Party would not be as far right as it is, and the Democratic Party would not be as far left.
I think that started in 2008. And, I mean, but the Romney thing is a much closer question because it was such a close race.
Well, now Romney, if he were to run for president as a Democrat right now, he would be formidable. If he could get through the primaries.
Yeah.
If he could make it to the general election,
he
would win.
That's right. But I don't think he can get to the general election. And that is the primary system problem that we have in the presidential politics. It's dominated by the activists, basically. I wrote a master's thesis about that 50 years ago, and
it's still
sure
relevant.
Sure enough, it's true.
Paul in Opelousas. Paul, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Jim. A question to your guest. The present person who's leading for the attorney general is saying how she's going to be tough on crime and really, you know, put people in jail. But our present governor was the attorney general, and he says the same thing, too. So does the attorney general have the power to affect crime, stating that Shreveport, New Orleans, and Baton Rouge is leading murder rates all over the country? He didn't seem to affect that much as attorney general. So how can he plan to do it as governor, and how can she do it as attorney general?
Well, how much can an attorney general do to thwart crime?
Well, it's not a lot. I mean, they have to pass laws and do some things that they need to do to be able to interject themselves into criminal prosecutions and proceedings and so on. So that's what they're talking about.
But now, much of this is, of course, politics.
Certainly.
And I recall when Vitter ran against Edwards, he said he wants to let all these thugs out of jail. And then when the bill came up, the guy lobbying it for John Bel Edwards was David Vitter.
Isn't that interesting? The what money will do. But way back in 1970, people in Louisiana, in 1979, I got taught a lesson. They didn't care what the attorney general did. They said, this is what the attorney general does, which is fight crime. And that is what they think the attorney, he's a small DA, all right, mm-hmm. or she's a small mm-hmm. DA. And that's what they think. And if you go tell them that's not true, they're going to beat your ass because you're lying to them. Okay, excuse my language, but
well,
that's just the truth.
As we segue to Mark Ballard, and I'd like for you to stay for a few moments, Roy, but Mark is at the Capitol, and Mark, we speaking of fighting crime, we've got lawmakers who are fighting each other. What's going on in Washington right now?
Boy, that is something. It's like Lord of the Flies up here. So it's kind of, you have a we had one lawmaker, one that was against McCarthy, claiming that he was elbowed in the back by McCarthy. And McCarthy says, oh, no, it was just a mistake. But there was a lot of people said, yeah, it looked like he did it on purpose. And then we had the senator from Oklahoma, you know, standing up and ready to go to duke it out with the head of the Teamster Union. And 80-something-year-old Bernie Sanders to break it up.
Well, and Robin Dow has pulled up the snippet of the action between Mark Wayne Mullen, former MMA fighter, guy stands about 5'6", but packs a wallop, senator from Oklahoma in his first year. And by the way, these two have tangled before in the same committee. And Sean O'Brien, head of the Teamsters Union, man from Massachusetts, and here's how it sounded with Bernie Sanders, the chair, playing peacemaker. Do we have it, Robin? She's pulling it up, and we'll see if we can get it. But I think we may have to fight for another minute or two here. So I tell you what, we're about to go to a break, so why don't you see if we can collect it during the break. But at any rate, this is great theater. And Mark Wayne Mullen's been going all over television, Roy, and now he's one of the best-known U.S. senators. He's better known than John Kennedy now.
There you
so
go. It's unbelievable.
He might run for president.
What's this new app you get on that Just Friends or whatever they call it? You ought to go open him an app like that.
Well, yeah, but he's suddenly made a name. He's not backing down. He pulled his wedding ring off. Now,
he didn't want to hurt the guy. But you got to like him, though. Mark Wayne. Mark Wayne got two first names. You got to like that.
Yeah, he's a very Oklahoma kind of guy.
And Mark Wayne.
About to join the SEC. He went to Oklahoma State, so he is a cowboy. We'll be back after this timeout with Mark Ballard and maybe a bit of Roy Fletcher. This is Jim Inkster, Robin Dow producing. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, the number 877-217-5757. We're continuing our weekly discussion with Mark Ballard at the nation's capital, which is now fraught with danger as Mark Wayne Mullen, former MMA fighter, now senator from Oklahoma, almost tangled with Sean O'Brien, the head of the Teamsters Union, and Bernie Sanders, the octogenarian senator from Vermont, had to play peacemaker, and he did a pretty good job of it. But these two guys have gone at it before in the same committee, and I think Bernie, the smart man that he is, had to know that something like this might happen because it almost happened before, and I have a feeling if we're going to get to another round of this, the next time there will be a fistic encounter. But Robin is trying earnestly to pull it up, and I think she's got it now. Here's the brief version of what happened between Senator Mullen and President O'Brien.
I sure remember working pretty hard and long hours. Pretends like he's self-made. What a clown. Fraud. Always has been, always will be. Quit the tough guy act in these Senate hearings. You know where to find me. Any place, any time, cowboy. Sir, this is a time, this is a place. If you want to run your mouth, we can be two consenting adults. We can finish it here.
Okay, that's fine. Perfect.
You want to do it now?
I'd love to do it right now.
Well, stand your butt up then.
You stand your butt up.
Oh, hold on. Oh, stop it.
Is that your solution, every poll?
No, no, sit down.
I'm sorry, Eric.
Sit down. Okay. You know, you're a United States Senator. Sit down.
Active.
Oh, okay.
Sit down, please.
All right.
Can I respond, Mr.
Hold it. Hold it. If we can't, no, I have the mic. I'm sorry.
This is
Hold
what
it.
He said.
You'll have your time.
Okay.
Can I respond?
Oh, no, you can't. This is a hearing. God knows the American people have enough of contempt for Congress. Let's not make
like
it worse.
I don't like thugs and bullies.
I don't like you because you just described yourself.
Hold it.
All right. Well, I think we get the idea, Robin. But Mark, great theater, and maybe people will be more geared to committee hearings now as a result of this.
Yeah, certainly, because otherwise they can sometimes run very long. One thing is that they've all left after the Senate late last night passed the continuing resolution. Everybody got on a plane and went home, and that's been after 10 solid nonstop weeks. And maybe that had something to do with it as well.
Well, those two have expressed dislike for one another, and I have a feeling that there will be another round of this. But
there's a lot of people up here that dislike other people vociferously, and but they don't ever actually go towards to swinging.
Well, but the former Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, is accused of elbowing one of his colleagues in the kidneys. And this was one of the guys who overthrew McCarthy. By the way, as we segue to perhaps a cheerier note, Mike Johnson actually got a bunch of Democrats to go along with a budget resolution. Why did they go with him when they wouldn't help McCarthy out in his hour of need?
Well, they did actually help him out with the CR, which was what led to
his demise, yeah.
Right. Basically, what Johnson did was he gave the far right wing what it wanted, and that was that laddered approach to a continuing resolution. But he wouldn't go so far as to do policy insertions and dramatic cuts. And now the right wing is mad at him, and we'll see how long that this all lasts. But the Democrats said, well, fine, we can deal with the laddered approach as long as there's not deep cuts and as long as there's not these kind of cultural wars, policy insertions into the appropriations bill. And so they went along with them as they did with McCarthy. And we saw that it cost McCarthy.
It cost McCarthy his job. And I'm trying to pull up the votes. I know it ended up getting more Democratic votes than Republican, but did anybody in our legislation, in our delegation vote against it?
I don't believe so, but I'll pull up the votes and make sure. The last time I did that without actually looking at them, they switched the votes.
I remember. James, while Mark's doing that, James and Metairie. James, you're on Talk Louisiana. Good morning. Hi, James.
Yeah, good morning, Jim and Mark. By the way, this guy, Mark Wayne Mullen, he's the only sitting senator without a bachelor's degree. He attended Oklahoma State, got a two-year associate's degree. By the way, he inherited a plumbing business from his father. That's his claim to fame. That's a threat against the Teamsters president. This threat of violence. Yesterday, I think it was Clay Higgins, the representative out the Lafayette way, he threatened. People are saying he threatened the FBI director, saying, quote, "Your day is coming, Mr. Ray." It's a sad, sad atmosphere they're creating, Jim.
All right. Well, Clay Higgins is highly popular in Acadiana, where our previous guest, Roy Fletcher, has handled a few candidates. I didn't know that 99 U.S. senators have degrees. The odd one out is Mark Wayne Mullen. There are several U.S. House members, a couple from Louisiana.
But he got an associate degree.
Associate degree.
Yeah. Two-year.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that counts.
Probably in business.
And he inherited his wealth, and he's made it bigger, and it sounds like something Gail Benson's done, who's the richest person in Louisiana. A listener said, what does it say about Louisiana that our richest person is an owner of the football and basketball teams, and the highest paid public officials are the football coach at LSU and the women's basketball coach at LSU? So that's where we are. But what about congressional redistricting, Mark? I would imagine these Congress people have come home, but some of them are on the phone right now saying they're calling in their chips.
Well, yeah, and apparently we're going to be having a redistricting session so that Judge Dick is not the one that actually writes it up. So, I mean, I guess we're going to see that in the first couple of weeks of January. But, I mean, right now, I mean, if you're looking at the maps, the choices are Mike Johnson, Julia Letlow, Garrett Graves. And from what we hear, it's probably going to end up being Garrett Graves getting the change in the district.
Well, and if that happens, Graves, of course, could run for another seat. He could run against Higgins. He could run against anybody for that matter. But he could also wait and run against Cassidy in 2026. I don't think we've heard the last of Garrett Graves, but. But Baton Rouge is a blue parish in a red sea, and in the parish with the outlying population is big enough for a congressional district. So it'd be nice to have Baton Rouge whole and not floating off into other parts of the state. And the map that was considered as a replacement would have had Baton Rouge and Monroe connected. I don't regard us necessarily as sister cities. Phil in Jefferson Terrace, you're on with Mark. Hello, Phil.
Hello, good morning, gentlemen. And I expected that there would be a runoff, I mean, between Sean Wilson, and then that's when the governor's race would really heat up because, I understand that I think he would made a great governor.
All right. Well, I don't think he would have won a runoff, but at least we would know what the base Democratic vote is, and Landry would be, I think, a minimum of 60%. So, Mark, he would have had his a bigger mandate than the 51.56%. But I don't see how Sean Wilson could have won a runoff.
I don't think that I see that as much as a possibility. Is it the he didn't have the military background that John Bell Edwards had. He wasn't mm-hmm. anti-abortion the way John Bell Edwards was, who reached out, and because of his stances, because of his military background, in my mind, and Roy may disagree with me, seemed to be able to give Republicans who didn't like David Vitter an option.
Yep.
And
that's true.
And
well, and then Patrick at Innisfail State, he chided me for saying that a higher black turnout would have meant a difference in the election if it had gone significantly higher. And to put that in perspective, there were about 250,000 black citizens who voted in the October 14th primary, and Wilson got about 200,000 of those votes. So if you, let's say you triple that and you get to 750, another 500,000, that moves him from 250 to 650 on a percentage basis. And 650 would put him in first place. And if you move it a little bit higher, he's not only in first place, he's in first place without a runoff. So it's all about turnout. And black voters did not turn out in huge numbers. I think the turnout was about 21% in New Orleans, a little less than 25% statewide. And Mark, I commend Rolf McCollister, who churned the numbers. There are only about 3.3 million people in the state eligible to vote, because of people under 18, and of those, 3 million are registered. So we're doing a great job of registering people, but a very poor job of getting people to the polls.
Yes, but that always seems to have been the case. You know, the only time that they really come out is during presidential years, and when I was a kid, they came out for those kind of races, but.
All right. Robert in Alabama has been waiting. I want to slide you in before we hit the break and hit call it a day. Robert, you're on.
Yeah, well, think about this scenario, that the Baton Rouge is going to be the minority district, and it's pretty 50-50, and Garrett Graves runs, and Cleo Fields runs, and Jeff Landry likes Cleo Fields, but would he try to hurt Garrett to take away a Republican seat in Congress?
That's a delicious scenario, but we are about to find out what's going to happen. But thank you, Mark. Thank you, Roy. Thank you, Robert. Subaru is our signature sponsor, and we're back tomorrow. Stay tuned.